What happens if I, drive up productivity by 1%? What's my DEI statistics look like if I make these changes? These are all things which are very hard to do right now. And Lattice has that advantage that, yes, we're a startup company or growth company. We can move fast. And we have data that we can build AI. And there's a lot of data then that makes management and executives successful.
Welcome to Path to Growth. I'm Tracy Young, co-founder and CEO of TigerEye. Today, we are joined by Sarah Franklin, CEO at Lattice. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here, Tracy.
So tell me about growing up, Sarah.
Growing up, oh my gosh, how much time do we have? I grew up in Virginia, Richmond, Virginia, and my mom was a single mom teacher. So I'd go with her to her classroom and help her do her billboards and things like that. And then, she remarried, had a brother. He was younger, took care of him, helped. And then, went off to college and had pursuits of being a doctor. So I did engineering, biochemistry. I was bad, though, at the chemistry part. So I went on into tech and moved to California and had a career, which has had many paths along the way and got me here. And it's a short version. I don't know how much you want like to know about everything, hobbies and such.
I think that gets to set the stage and get to know a little bit more about you. And what I find really fascinating is, you say you're bad at the chemistry part, but you have a degree from Virginia Tech, 2 degrees, chemical engineering and biochemistry. And it's so interesting to, see you go the tech and marketing route. And now, we lead a very big company over at Lattice as CEO. All your training has helped you. It must have influenced you going into tech and becoming a marketing leader.
Yeah. So my mother used to ask me all the time, what does your degree have to do with what you do every day? The answer is very simple to me because engineering school at Virginia Tech, they really ground you from the beginning, day one, in a solution orientation, a problem-solving mindset. So when you see a problem, how do you not just jump into solving it, but take time to write down what you know about the problem? Write down any assumptions that you're making, which might be preventing you from thinking creatively or outside of the box, or anything which may prevent you from considering certain potential solutions. And then going through the process of writing down the solutions step by step so that if you make an error along the way, you can go back to your work and recheck it. So that's how I got into programming. Programming is really just taking a problem and solving it with code. And, looking to see if it's doing it correctly, testing it, making sure it's doing what you want it to do. That's a great foundation, whether you're going to development, whether you're going into marketing, whether you're going into running a business, because you have to always look at the problems that you're solving for your customers and think of creative, interesting, efficient, effective ways to solve it. And always be looking for how you continuously improve and make it better. So that was a great foundation, not just for developers, but for marketing, yes, for running a business, yes, and for any pathway you want to pursue in your career.
Yeah, I was trained as a construction engineer and spent a few years in the field learning from really great leaders. I mean, very different from tech leaders, of course, but great leaders in themselves. And I do feel that my education in engineering has really helped me in tech and as a CEO, that when I see a problem, it feels, even when I don't know the solution, I know there is a way to get through this, whether we break it into smaller pieces of problems and go after each, or, maybe it's not a direct path, but we got to go around. But having this engineering mindset, this problem solving mindset has really, I think, helped me excel as a tech person, tech leader.
I think what you also have is a curiosity. It's a curiosity of what if. What if we try this? What if we try that? And a courage to try. And those are the things that for yourself and anyone that wants to be a great leader, you have to have that courage. Yes, combined with a creativity and curiosity that will, like you said, problem solve, to break it down to smaller chunks and you know, but and always be, you know, thinking ahead is a fun part of the job, is to not just be like day to day doing the same thing, but thinking outside the box and how can you always improve? At least for me, that's what I
mean. I love how much you sound like, it's not just engineering, it's really being a scientist, right? Like being curious and trying and invalidating or validating your ideas, which I can see would have really helped out in the marketing role. So you were CMO of Salesforce and now you're CEO. Were there any challenges you faced during the transition, or was it like not bad?
So I feel very lucky for the transition that I was able to go through, because I came from Salesforce 15 years. I ran the platform business there. I built Trailhead, the online learning platform there. And yes, I was CMO there as my last job before leaving, and was able to build great relationships with Salesforce leadership, our customers at Salesforce. And going into Lattice as CEO, there was a lot of support for seeing the growth of going from a CMO to a CEO and the adjacency of the market, because it was going from a customer-facing company to the employee. Lattice is basically a people platform to manage people and their performance. So what I'm trying to say is, in very short words, it's not competitive and it's complementary. And so the leadership, so Mark was very excited for me to go take over for Jack. Mark had been he'd known about the company from early on. And so that transition was easy there. And then coming into Lattice, I was very accepted by the board and by the investors and by Lattice employees. And so that transition itself was straightforward. It was a new market for me. So going from a CRM market to an HCM market, there's a lot to learn there, a different buyer that I'm working with. Yeah, different size and stage of company. So what was I'd like to say there is that the learning piece was really intellectually stimulating and activating, because I had been working in one space for so long that shifting the space, shifting the buyer, shifting the size, shifting orientation was just so like activating intellectually. And then also the role has many more facets of not just one function, but running all functions simultaneously, where your job is really to build that great team of leaders that are taking a company forward. So it was a really good transition. I had a 30, 60, 90 plan in place, which was very helpful with communicating where I'm at in the transition to employees and to leadership and to all shareholders. But it was a good transition.
I'm so happy to hear that. It sounds like it. You were at Salesforce for 15 years, and I'm sure you saw, I mean, you know, the only way Salesforce can retain someone like you is they're doing something right, and you had a meaningful time there. What did you bring over? Like, what were the lessons at your time at Salesforce that you liked so much that you brought to Lattice?
I mean, I have to say 15 years was an incredible time at Salesforce. I made incredible friends. I learned so much about business and go-to-market and product development and innovation. I will say, coming over to Lattice, very simple thing that myself and anybody that has worked with Mark Benioff and his world is well-versed on, is something called a V2 MOM, which is an organization management methodology that Mark created. And it's in his book, Behind the Cloud, where it's very simple: vision, values, and then your methods, your obstacles, and your metrics. And it sounds like a bunch of letters put together, but what it means, which is so powerful, is that you have to have a big vision and then very clear understanding of the values that will guide your decision-making. And then a prioritized list of the simple 10 things that you're going to do to accomplish that vision. Very clear-eyed about the 10 things that could be obstacles in getting in your way. And then accountability to the metrics that you're going to know how you achieve that success. And that maniacal prioritization, that maniacal focus on thinking not just about what you can do in 1 year, but what you can do in 10 years. And getting people bought in and aligned on that is so powerful to come into a company and to know that if it's not in your V2 mom, you shouldn't be doing it because it's a distraction from obtaining your vision and the plan. And that is very freeing as well for people that they feel like they're working on something that maybe they don't know how it aligns to the company goals. And so you say, oh, well, this is very clearly in the V2 mom, or it's very clearly not in the V2 mom. And so it makes it very easy as a CEO to make those decisions, what you're going to fund, what you're not going to fund, where you're going to invest, where you're not going to invest. And your team is very aligned on that, and they understand what those puts and takes will be. Because when you're coming in, especially as a new CEO and taking over from a founder, it's very important that the company and all shareholders and all stakeholders understand where you're taking the company and they see where they fit into that plan.
Prioritization is hard for every team. And I'd imagine at a company like Lattice, there's so many competing priorities. So you come into Lattice, you're meeting a CEO, you're not getting organ rejected by anyone there, which is great. Walk me through your framework on prioritization and then getting the team behind it. Specifically, those like 10 priorities for this year.
Yeah, this is the most important thing that companies can do. Also, anyone can do in their life. You know, I also have my own like personal like V2 mom of how I make my own personal decisions. Like, what is more important between your fitness or your nutrition or your time with children or your time with friends or your, you know, like what are the puts and takes of what you will prioritize in your personal life? It's the same thing you do in the business world is you prioritize. Like, what's more important? Is it more important that my customer success is top, that my systems are up and people trust that I'm a good steward of their data, that we have revenue growth and that we have brand awareness, or that we have good operational efficiency, or that my team is healthy and happy? And if all things are equally important at all times, it gets real hard to make decisions around what you're going to fund. So by writing them down in priority order and then having discussion with the exec team, we have an alignment exercise where it's very simple. You just start at the first one and you say, is trusted customer success more important than a winning team? And they'll either agree or disagree on which one is more important. And then you keep going down, is winning team more important than revenue growth? And if some people, you start to get to these tension points where people say, oh, wait, pipeline's more important than you know, the revenue. Okay, well, let's discuss this. And so you go through this exercise, which may feel somewhat monotonous, but you end up then at the end with a very clear set of priorities that their exec team is aligned on their order. So your CIO and your CRO aren't going to be arguing later down the road if you decide that revenue is more important than operational efficiency. They're like, okay, well, we agreed and aligned on that. And now these are our priorities and these are our budgets. It's pretty simple to do, but it's not always that easy to do because you have to have uncomfortable conversations sometimes.
Right. I imagine priorities 4, 5, and 6, there's trade-offs to, you know, the order. And what do you do in a stalemate? You've got two executives or a few executives that are just really passionate about, I don't know, some priority being number 3 versus number 4. And they're just like really strongly opinioned on it. And you're at a complete stalemate. What does Sarah, CEO, do at that point?
Decides. And you decide, you make a decision and you move forward. It's important to listen. It's important to learn. It's important to understand that to know what you don't know, and to also leave the open door for adjustment if the decision turns out to be incorrect. This is why it's important to have the clear metrics to know if something's working or not working. And also, if something is a top priority for the company, and if it is not doing as well as it needs to be, the entire company needs to be behind it. And you can't have splintering or anybody behind the scenes like, oh yeah, I'm glad they didn't have that. succeed. And that's the type of environment that this creates, where because the items are in priority order, if you're not achieving like the first thing, like we need to make sure that we are staffed and that we're focused enough on that first thing. For Lattice, it's very important that we have, you know, trusted customer value from our products. And that is something which everyone at my company knows and they believe. And we report out transparently how we're doing on it. That's the other part of it, is that learning from Salesforce is that this is not some secret plan that executives have. It's a transparent plan that the company, the whole company, all employees knows, sees, understands, is enabled on, and is aligned to. So to answer your question, though, very simply, like, you can't leave things in paralysis because there's no decision. You simply decide and move forward. The whole, you know, agree and disagree and commit, perhaps, but that's what we have to do, is support each other in the end. And it's ultimately, I'll make a decision if I need to.
Yeah. One of the greatest lessons during my time in construction working for a superintendent, whenever I got stuck, and it wasn't even about me not getting along or not agreeing with other teammates, it's just like I truly was stuck on a decision. And my superintendent would say, Tracy, just make the decision. If it was black and white, you would have made it already. This is obviously somewhere in the gray. Just make the decision. If you're wrong, you can make another decision tomorrow. But keep moving. Do not let, you know, the business and the project stagnate. Yes, stagnation is just the worst thing that can happen. This is how diseases come up.
There's two places in the world which I think are the worst to be. One is Churnville and the other was Limbo Land. And I say that because whenever you feel that you're in limbo and you just don't know what the decision is, you get this very dysfunctional set of work that happens because people develop apathy. They don't feel that they just feel like, well, it doesn't matter what I do because who knows what's going to happen. And then Churnville is the state of just constantly changing things. And so you have to balance that to make a decision which is informed, but you hold yourself highly accountable so that, yes, you can make another decision, but you're going to make the next day, but you'll make a more informed decision if there's a problem that has arisen. And that transparency combined with the accountability is, in my opinion, what we really need from leaders, to be willing to make the decision, to be accountable if it is the incorrect decision, and the willingness to course correct without worrying about ego. There's strength in recognizing failure and learning from it and adjusting.
Yeah, I totally agree. Even failure are dead data points for you. Walk me through Sarah's cadence of like meetings and the types of meetings that you have, that you like to have.
Meetings. So for me, what I like to start my week, first meeting of the week, is with my staff. I like to have the Monday staff meeting and us all be aligned on what we're going to be doing with the teams and the company for that week. And then the end of week, I like to end on Fridays with our weekly commit call to understand where we're at from a business perspective. By starting off the week with my team, it gives the opportunity to understand if there's any, not just long-term things we should be discussing, but if there's any hot items that we see the team facing the week. And then I like to spend my time mixed between meeting with customers and, you know, strategic meetings where I'm useful. One of the hardest things about being a leader is recognizing and understanding that your job is not to necessarily participate in the things that you are best at or that you are enjoy the most. Your job is to be where you're needed most and to empower your leaders to be strong, to really just make decisions and operate with your trust when you're not needed. And that's a great thing when your leaders don't need you. It means that you've hired well and you've empowered those leaders to do great things. And then when you're needed, for you to show up and be willing to do whatever, you know, whether it's small tasks or large strategic thinking, is to be there. What I don't like in meetings is just, reviews that are just internal time wasted, per se, where people feel very stressed that they're, being judged, where the meeting should be working sessions, where you're looking at how are things working. I want to come to a meeting and learn, like, what did my team learn? What worked? What didn't work? What will we do differently next time? What surprised them about what they were doing? And to really build up that trust that we're in it together versus just having a meeting to get like a status update per se.
You talk about learning a lot. What has been your biggest learnings? Maybe I could rephrase the question. What's like the best part about selling to sales versus and the best part about selling to HR that you've learned so far?
The very different buyers. It's very, very interesting. Sales and marketing professionals are very revenue oriented. They're very much around anything that will help them and get that incremental lift on their pipeline or their revenue or their conversion or their productivity levels. They're very focused on that. And the systems are for them in service of achieving their goal, which is a number, it is a quantity of thing. An HR leader is very focused on people as their guiding star. And so they look to systems and solutions through a very different lens, which is, how will this make people better? How will this help our company's morale, culture? How will this make it so that our people are thriving, which has a direct then implication on their business? So, well, revenue leaders are focused on like a number. HR leaders are focused on people very, very directly. And it's by design, just they're very caring people. And they're very principled people that genuinely want the success of people as their north. And so it's a different conversation that you have with an HR leader versus a revenue and marketing leader. Not saying revenue marketing leaders don't care about people. It's just that's not their metric as much. And just the fact of learning, I do think that every day we should all be, I just don't feel like I'm living if I'm not learning. And that's the way that I feel that approaching every day with that beginner's mind, which is, do not assume I am the expert. Do not assume that I know it all. Always seek to understand another perspective, another point of view, another solution, another idea, another problem, and learn. And when you have that mentality, I think as a leader as well, you find yourself with a wider aperture and a deeper set of understanding for the operational, cultural aspects of your company and your customers.
I love that you mentioned that. I think we don't do enough of that. Just being curious and, sitting still enough or asking some questions just to absorb. There's like so many times it's unexpected. I get such gifts, even from like an Uber driver. Getting to learn about their lives and where they're from and like what matters to them and getting a new perspective on someone's culture just from listening.
Listening is so powerful. And there's that thing I've loved is the, you have the two ears and the one mouth. So we should listen more than we speak. And it also requires a confidence. It's very interesting that speaking can sometimes come from anxiety, nerves, insecurity, where listening, being comfortable in a silence or just understanding, like you said, what somebody's culture may be. And so much of this world is misunderstanding from a lack of listening and not having the humility enough to say, oh, that makes sense, or I get that, and being able to seek to understand so you can come to a mutual set of, you may not agree. Like we said earlier, we may not agree. A revenue leader and a CIO may disagree, but if they understand why and understand what the person's thinking or feeling, it really just drives a better ability to communicate, to collaborate, and you just have a deeper understanding. Because at the end of the day, we're all people. I know that AI and everything, but like people is the most complicated system in the world. And the more that we invest in the success of our people and that system, the better everything else is going to be, because no technology can replicate a people system. And we can hopefully have AI and these technologies be in service of us to help us be faster or, you know, more informed. But it doesn't change that we're emotional, social, and deeply complex individuals that need to work together well to run successful businesses.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. As you know, as an AI tech company, I can imagine on our team, that's all we talk about is AI, and especially in go-to-market. So it's all about like, how is our product better than Salesforce Einstein? How is it more accurate? How is it easier to use? Which it is. But I do think that what makes great work, what makes a great team, a great piece of art, great piece of music, great food, there's like a human element to it that isn't so tangible. It's the human's perspective and the human's love and care that went into it, but AI will never be able to do. And so even when we're selling our product and we're building a business AI analyst where you can just ask a bunch of, you know, any question goes and go to market, we do have to explain to people that this is not going to replace, AI is not going to replace people. It's people who leverage AI that might replace people who don't. It's a tool for you to be more productive. So as this world, especially technology, is moving further along with AI, tell me about how AI, I mean, is going to change the HR space.
I mean, it already is, and it already has, and in ways that many people don't realize. This is one thing with the time and space we're in right now. There's an incredible amount of innovation. There's not nearly enough education, and there's a huge amount of fear and anxiety for what the future holds. And you put these three ingredients together of something moving really fast that people don't know what it is, and people are afraid of it. That is, you know, like a visual tornado or quicksand, you know, thing that you're in. And it is a moment, getting back to the engineering at the very beginning, of where we need to like take a breath and write down, just be real clear of what we know, be real clear what we don't know, and be real clear on what we're trying to do. So for HR, you ask, like, how is this going to change? Well, I mean, it's incredible in what it can do for how we learn, to have bespoke learning, coaching, all of the nuanced understanding of everything that's going on within your organization, not just engagement survey results, but like deep one-on-ones of understanding how every interaction is working and how you're doing in your systems, where you're doing work, whether you're an engineer or a salesperson or a customer service professional. So all of the understanding of how you're doing and all of the bespoke learning that it can create, then how we lead, again, from all that data, but having the ability to have very advanced planning, very great understanding of the business, deeply know people's archetypes, meaning like, you know, I may respond to different leadership styles. You know, like some people, I like to say they like the drill sergeant, you know, they're like the real intense leader that, you know, pushes them every day. And some people like the more zen leader that's just more supportive and mentoring and listening and guiding. And so that can help our leadership. And then how we grow our businesses, to how we can, with more precision, drive our workforce planning, know like where and when and who and what we need to hire for different tasks. Companies are not wanting to grow their headcount linearly with their revenue growth. And so how do you forecast that? How do you recruit the right talent? So all of this, and then you bring in, we see this rise of AI agents right now, which is a huge thing for HR to be at the epicenter of the decision of, am I deploying headcount dollars or technology dollars and program dollars for the person or an agent to do these jobs? And those are some very big decisions that we're facing. And yes, it is true that you need to use AI and learn AI so that you're not displaced by somebody else that is using it more than yourself. But that learning takes time, and that learning curve is that learning curve as fast on pace as the technology innovation curve. And that is, you know, when you have like these kind of curves not being in sync and the technology happening so fast, we have to make sure that we don't like disrupt ourselves where we put in the AI and we don't ask the questions like, okay, well, what systems do the AI have access to? Okay, well, who's the person in charge of that AI that's doing this conversation with my customer or my employee? These are all questions that HR has an opportunity, in my opinion, right now to lead through. It is hard to lead when you don't have the answers to all of the questions that are being asked. It is hard to lead when there's a lot of fear, and it is hard to lead when there's a lot of uncertainty around people's jobs. And so it takes courage. Everything was at the beginning. See, it all applies. Like everything you learned in engineering, construction engineering, computer engineering, chemical engineering, doesn't matter. But this ability to look at this problem and say, how do we solve this? And how do we have the curiosity and the courage to apply solutions when we don't know with certainty what the answers are?
Trust in leaders can be made or broken when things get tough. How do you deal with the crisis?
I think any leader in a moment of crisis, the most important thing, number one, is to show up, acknowledge what is happening, and try to learn as quickly as you can the ins and outs of what is happening and be accountable to what is happening. So if as a CEO, if something's happening with your company, it's ultimately on you. You don't pass the buck. You know, it stops with you. And when people know that, there's trust in that because they know that they're not going to, you know, shift blame, because ultimately the CEO is accountable for what happens at the business. And then if there's things that you need to, actions you need to take to rectify as you find a root cause and a change, you also have to be accountable for making those decisions and changes and for making them in the time continuum space that is appropriate for any crisis.
What's your long-term goals for Lattice?
Oh, I mean, to the moon, right? Or to Mars. There's no limits. I see huge potential for Lattice. I really see what Salesforce did for customers being an inspiration for what Lattice can do for employees. Lattice started with a lot of the similar principles as Salesforce of, you know, making it easy, making it fast, and making it fully open and connected. And so just as Salesforce took a customer data model, applied roles, security, permissioning, customizations, things that businesses need to deeply understand their customers, to connect with them in whole new ways, it's at Lattice, it's really about the same thing. It's like, okay, a learning I had coming in was like, oh my gosh, the HR tech industry has done a complete disservice to employees because it hasn't built great technology for them. And so we're doing just that. We have the employee data model, and we have, yes, all of the goals and the performance reviews and the engagement and the career growth plans, now backed by a full HRIS platform. Does your payroll, does your benefits, does all the things that you need for your global company, and in a way that employees love to use it. And it has AI foundational, meaning you can like have a conversation with it. You don't have to, you know, I don't know if you've ever had to look up, you know, your benefits information or if you've ever wanted a promotion, but being able to go to your HR system and say, hey, like my mom's sick, can I go take care of her? And for it to tell you, oh, I know where you live, how long you've been here, I know your benefits packages, I know all this information. Here's a very simple thing. You can take 3 weeks off and, you know, this is the pay you'll get. And if you need longer, this is what you do. how do I get a promotion? Oh, well, I can know what you're good at, what your career plans are, what the open roles are. I can know all of the coaching that you need, the mentors you should connect to, all of this. And this is the timeline. This is what you should expect. These are conversations you should have with your manager. These are maybe even adjacent roles, which you could look into. I can have a conversation. You know, these are things that Lattice opens up so many doors to develop your people. And when your people are thriving, your business is going to thrive. And that is a huge opportunity for Lattice to be the system that's powering the 70% resource investment that every company makes in their people, that system to be like firing on all cylinders, which is super hard to do. Because like I said before, your people system is your most important and your most difficult system to operate.
I do think the products you were describing are so powerful, mostly because we're seeing it on our side also from the go-to-market lens of there's just certain questions, and maybe it has to do with people's personalities where they just don't want to go to their like finance leader or their head of sales to ask a question or their HR leader to ask the question. It's a lot safer just to type this question out at 11 p.m. at night by myself and then get answers back.
Yes. It saves the HR department time because, you know, they don't have to have all this inundation of tickets that come in, and they don't have to maintain a very complicated help desk system. It's still there, but it's like, it can be for much more difficult questions. But these questions are the same at every company, no matter the industry, size, location. It's very interesting when we look at anonymized data of the top 10 to 20 questions employees have, they're pretty straightforward. And turns out, answer those questions and you have interactions, employees like are very happy. Like their expectations are so low right now. The expectation for somebody asking a question, how do I get promoted, is I won't get an answer. I'm going to get a bunch of non-answer, and I can't rely on anything said. For building a software that's going against like that bar, which is so bro, I'm like, this is like huge upside for us, right? Mm-hmm. Where everybody feels like, oh yeah, I feel that I'm doing work that is meaningful. It's connected to my company's purpose and mission. My work has an impact and I feel listened to by my manager. And I feel that I have a growth pathway over the next year to 2 years. I'm going to work on these three things. And this is where, I don't know barely any employees that feel that level of clarity and that level of meaning in their work. And so that is a huge opportunity for Lattice to make work meaningful for all employees. And that's our market, is all employees, worldwide at companies. That's a huge opportunity for us.
Lattice has obviously grown a lot in the last 10 years, but I still think it's still in the startup category, and just knowing people work at Lattice and just the reputation, I feel that it's still very much this fast-moving startup. And I think what I'm curious about is, having been at a very successful large public company and seeing through those years of growth, what do you think the advantage is for startups competing with larger companies? Because you've got, I don't know the roadmaps, but I'm sure you're competing with a Workday as an example.
Yeah, so this is the opportunity for Lattice. You laid it out perfectly that we're the new kid on a block in a category that is ripe for modernization with a tool which has AI foundational as product market fit and maturity, which means we have a strong set of customers and also data to also build, maybe small tuned models into our application and on areas which we have deep expertise. So how you would do promotions, incentive structures, compensation, workforce planning, scenario planning. What would it mean if I moved a third of my developers to this other location? Or what would it mean if I invested in Atlanta as a new sales hub? What would it mean if I wanted to open up a go-to-market investments in this certain region and be able to use this. And what happens if I, you know, drive up productivity by 1%? What's my DEI statistics look like if I make these changes? These are all things which are very hard to do right now. And Lattice has that advantage that, yes, we're a startup company or growth company. We can move fast. And we have data that we can build AI because we have an open system. We're not a walled garden. And we have the platform, which is modern and experience first. So it's we have that advantage that employees love to use it. And there's a lot of data then that makes management and executives successful. And then the people are thriving, so business is thriving, versus being a very complicated, old, expensive technology where even the consultants to implement it are expensive. And so you don't want to end up like HR system poor. You know, you want to end up, you want to be able to put in a system that goes fast and can accommodate your business, and especially for scaling and growing businesses, where you want one platform to do all of this together. It's, you know, it's a huge opportunity, and I do really have an advantage at Lattice over
no consultants or admin needed.
Yeah, right? I mean, you do need people like within your HR team to run the system. But yeah, it's not, they don't come at this huge premium that you see with some of the older systems.
Sarah, last question for you. I'm really enjoying this. I wish I could talk to you for another hour, but I got to get you back to work. What's like your parting advice for our listeners? Just your advice for people early on in their career who are very ambitious. What should they be doing more or less of? Or maybe advice you would tell yourself 20 years ago.
Yeah, for those listening early in career and early Sarah 20 years ago, I'd love to see her again, less wrinkles, you know. But I would say trust yourself more, think bigger, think bolder, think what you can achieve in 10 years, not what you can just achieve in one and maybe five even, but set that vision, set that goal, and then work your way towards it. And be purposeful and listen. And maybe this is a lot of advice and one piece of advice, which is life is short and take the risks, believe in yourself and always be learning. That's what I would say to those that are earlier in their career.
So much depth there. I feel like your one piece of advice could be a whole book when you break it down that way. You should write that someday. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tracy.